Jeff Conant is an author, journalist, and environmental human rights campaigner with nearly two decades of experience working on international environment and development issues. He's the author of A Poetics of Resistance, The Revolutionary Public Relations of the Zapatista Insurgency, and co-author of A Community Guide to Environmental Health. He currently directs Friends of the Earth's International Forests Program. It's wonderful to have you back on the show, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
In our last conversation, we were speaking about ecological toilets, and we touched on the subject of who deals with our human waste as a society, which class of people are relegated to managing our waste. You know a lot about how different cultures operate all over the world. You're very internationally traveled and renowned activist, and you have a lot to say about this subject.
I sure do. You know, as I get to thinking about it, quote unquote, civilized ways of dealing with waste are actually imperial ways of dealing with waste, which means, you know, what an empire does is it, by the very nature of empire, it either enslaves people or it enslaves, you know, what we could call the gifts of nature. It enslaves biodiversity, it enslaves ecology, turning the planet into a set of resources, essentially. You know, that's what our standard sewage system is it's enslaving the water to do our bidding. Ultimately, that is not good for the water. And ultimately, because we are integrated into the environment in ways that are far beyond our capacity to even understand, it's not good for us.
Our bodies are made up primarily of water. So anything that impacts the water impacts us.
Right. And so the point I'm trying to make is that from an imperial perspective, whether we're talking about the Han Chinese Empire, whether we're talking about the Mughal Empire, whether we're talking about the British Empire, the Roman Empire, the U.S. Empire, what you want to do as an empire is dominate and enslave another people and have them do your dirty work for you, whether it's your agriculture, whether it's your waste management, whether it's constructing your highways and your pyramids.
Cleaning your house and cleaning your toilet.
Yeah, exactly. So it's in that sense that ecological sanitation systems, diverse, decentralized, place-based sanitation systems where people who use the toilet clean and maintain the toilet rather than relegating that to some underclass, that's where this becomes socially revolutionary. Part of understanding this is looking at the built environment around us. You know, there's a saying that if there were buildings higher than two stories tall, there was slavery involved somewhere along the line. It's important that we recognize this, not as a way of shaming and guilting ourselves, but it's fundamentally part of what civilization is and always has been. If we want to address these patterns, if we want to get out of these patterns, were that even possible, we need to begin by looking at the very basic functions of our lives, how we eat, how our waste is managed, this sort of thing.
Okay, so for, you know, most of our audience, they're going to think, well, I'm not enslaving anybody. I need to poop, and the toilet that's available to me is the flush toilet, and I don't really care what happens to it after I press go.
Well, I have a flush toilet in my house. I use it all the time. You know, of course, we're all in this system, in this built environment, taking part in systems that, you know, when we stop to think about them, they're really not necessarily the ideal systems, which is to say there's no individual answer either. I do know people here in Oakland, California, who have built compost toilet systems in their houses because they find the question of pooping into the water to be odious, because that's, you know, where their consciousness has taken them. For the average person, this is very difficult, even impossible to do. It's illegal to do.
Why is it illegal to do?
Public health laws say here in California, they regulate things to an incredibly high degree because you're dealing with chemicals, you're dealing with industrial facilities, you're dealing with things much more complicated and much more toxic than human waste. You're also dealing with a high density population.
But why would it be illegal to build your own composting toilet for your own household use?
That's a very good question.
It seems like it would actually be beneficial for the public health because you're not contaminating water, you're not impacting the bay, you're actually decreasing the load on the public work system.
Right. Well, the way the public health paradigm is, it's not about expecting each person to take responsibility. It's about actually dominating and controlling the environment with the assumption that people are not capable of empowering themselves to take responsibility, but that actually people are the problem, are the pathogens, are the cause of ill health. Which isn't to say that, you know, if we just decided tomorrow to eliminate our public work systems and have everyone build a compost toilet in their house, I don't think that's going to go very well, because it's not part of our culture. You know, this isn't something that you can change overnight or even want to change overnight. But I do think it's important to recognize the social, cultural, historic patterns of domination and control, of exploitation, of marginalization that go into our very, you know, sanitation systems, our highways, our houses, our office buildings.
So those are all really good activist words, very colorful. But do you have any idea about how we came about to this current system of the flush and forget toilet? We obviously have not had our flush and forget system for more than a couple hundred years, right? So obviously we were excreting our waste before then. So do you have any idea how we evolved to this system?
There are some really great books out there on the topic. There's one called The Last Taboo that came out a couple of years ago by a woman named Maggie Black. In any case, there was something used in upper class houses in the 17th, 18th, 19th centuries that was called an earth closet, which was essentially a dry toilet or a compost toilet where the waste was taken out by the servants. There was also the chamber pot. You know, it was a bucket that you would poo and pee into in your house. This was standard in Europe in the, you know, 18th, 19th century.
And that was also emptied by the chambermaid.
Yeah, right. So there you have domination, exploitation, and avoidance of responsibility, we could say. So I believe it was the French who developed the waterborne toilet, and then it took off in the United States and in Europe in the 19th and 20th centuries, and very quickly became, you know, almost the very definition of civilization is, you know, having indoor plumbing.
And now it's spread pretty much all over the world.
Yeah, and part of the problem is, you know, if water were a renewable resource, were an infinite resource, and it turns out the amount of water on the planet is finite.
And decreasing.
And decreasing. So in the U.S., you know, we have sewage treatment plants, which do their job quite well. They're energy intensive, they're water intensive, they're land use intensive. In a lot of other places, you have flush toilets with no sewage treatment plants. So you've got massive cholera and other waterborne diseases related to the fact that this essentially Western imperial engineering system has been developed in places where it didn't naturally evolve. And so you don't have the whole system. There's a high status to having indoor toilet.
And a flush toilet. I can actually very clearly remember when my grandmother in India got a flush toilet, and it was a huge step up in her status in her neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. But did that town get a sewage treatment plant?
No, the sewage actually went straight out into the open gutter that ran along the sidewalk.
Right. You have high status right inside the house, but outside of the house, the status isn't quite so high. And so in a situation like that, it may be that the indoor flush toilet is not the appropriate sanitation solution, which doesn't mean that people, countries without the financial means to build these things need to live in indignity, need to do things in a way that is sub-civilized or, you know, but that's the stigma. When I was studying ecological sanitation, some of the most valuable lessons I learned is recognizing that with any technology, you don't want to necessarily go from nothing to what's considered the highest tech option, that there's a range of choices. And in order to pick the technology that is the most responsible, that's the most ecological, you have to first recognize what your needs are, what your abilities are, what your ecosystem demands. Are you in a dry place? Are you in a wet place? Are you in a highly densely populated place? Are you in a rural area? And from there, you can make decisions on, you know, what kind of sanitation system is going to be best that take into account, first and foremost, human dignity and the needs of the environment.
Well, I think there's a lot of cultural aspects and, as you mentioned, political aspects that come into how waste is managed, whether it's human excrement or whether it's just our trash and our garbage.
Yeah, and one of the things that ties together this whole conversation is the very concept of waste. In a natural system, there is no waste. So waste is a product of a poorly designed human system. A big piece of what we mean by waste is actually mixed waste. That's implied. So that, say, where we live in the Bay Area, we have great recycling options. In order to recycle, you need to separate out your metal from your glass, from your plastic, from your paper, because all of those things need to be treated down the line differently. When you mix them together, what happens is they go into an incinerator, they go into a landfill, the incinerator spews out toxic pollution, the landfill leaches out toxic pollution into the water because the problem is mixed waste. Sewage is the same way. If our waste is filled with, you know, antibiotics and hormones from the crap industrial food that we're eating.
Or the medicines that we're taking.
If the water is filled with chemicals, with paint thinner, with solvents, with cleaning detergents, then you've got a mixed waste nightmare, you know, that either continues to be a problem for a long, long time, like a landfill tends to.
When you send mixed sewage down your toilet, when it gets to the water treatment plant, ultimately through the various drains in the city system, the only thing that really gets taken out are the solids, whatever settles out. All the chemicals and heavy metals and pesticides and oils, they go straight out into the water.
Mm-hmm. Right. When we talk about solid waste, we talk about separation at source, separating out everything before it goes to be treated, because that way you're not dealing with a toxic mess at the end of the pipe. We need to do the same thing with sewage. And when we talk about the source, I mean, we're talking about what are we putting into the system. If you put in toxics, you get out toxics. That's where this becomes a much larger conversation about reducing our use and dependency on, you know, pesticides, on chemical fertilizers, on antibiotics, which are used way too much, on hormones, all of these things, which are essentially what makes the chemical industry wealthy and what has poisoned the planet. We now know full well over decades and centuries. I mean, that's the interesting point, where simply talking about the way we manage our human waste, it actually opens on to the need to completely redesign our industrial civilization.
And our concept of what makes us healthy. We have some idea that the more medicines we take, the more healthy we will be. And the more chemicals we use, the cleaner our environment will be. And the more efficiently we can live.
Yeah, and there's something that I'm sure you probably deal with a lot on Aging Now, which is this idea of purity. This idea that if we somehow destroy the microbes in our environment, in our internal environment, our external environment, that's healthy. And this is a certain ideal of what health is. And in fact, that's the very opposite of what health is. The idea of purity, again, is it's an imperial value, whether we're talking about the Han Chinese Empire or the Roman Empire or the British Empire. And that bridges onto ethnic purity, racial purity, species purity, this idea that you can eliminate the dirt from your environment. Well, it turns out that we are the dirt in our environment, that we are made up of bacteria. You know, we're part of the web of life, and it's only once we recognize our proper place in that web that we can have physical, social, spiritual health.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of bacteria, we're just a container for the bacteria to give us our life.
Mm-hmm. And so having a healthy relationship with the bacteria in your environment is what is needed, as opposed to having an idea that we need to dominate, control, and eliminate them, because that's ultimately death.
Wow. So you've mentioned the Han Dynasty, the Roman Dynasty, the Mughal Empire. Do you have anything specifically that you could educate us about in terms of how these empires have been imperialistic and what that has to do with our excrement?
Isn't that I thought we were done with that.
Well, it's interesting to think of our toilet systems as having something to do with imperialism. It's really like it's a concept that I had not thought of before. And the way that you're explaining it is really remarkable to think about the untouchable class in India having fewer political and human rights because we don't want to manage our excrement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, when I say imperial, I don't mean it in the sense of sending troops to a foreign shore to invade and dominate like the U.S. does everywhere, which is part of how I came to be so concerned about empire as an issue. What I mean is systems that are based on systematic exploitation, systems that are based on systematic forgetting, creating a situation where we are expected and bound to forget that we're destroying the potable drinking water, that we're shitting in the river, that there's a chambermaid cleaning out our waste. Because either you acknowledge that you are dominant and dominating and you celebrate that fact as aristocrats throughout history have always done, or you try to forget about it and ignore it because we're essentially exploiting ourselves.
Well said. There's also a very practical advantage to actually managing your own waste, and that you have a direct experience of the impact of what you're eating and then how it's getting digested and then eliminated. In Ayurveda, the Ayurvedic physician will grill you about the quality, consistency, frequency, every detail about your excrement. That's like a really important part. And most of us really don't know that because we flush and we forget.
Indeed. What it makes me think of, one of the old English word for shit is night soil. What that brings up for me is the Western psychological idea, the Jungian idea, actually, of the shadow self. Certainly throughout European history, you know, there's an emphasis on separating the upper, the mind, the spirit, the heart, from the lower body functions. There's an analogy there to the shadow self, to the side of your psyche that you would rather not deal with, the ugly side. Essentially, as a society, we deal with our human waste in that sense, in the sense that we deal with our shadow self. We'd rather not think about it, and we've created systems whereby we don't have to think about it.
Ultimately, we will have to think about it.
I'm afraid so.
Well, this has been a very enlightening conversation. Thank you so much, Jeff. It's been, once again, a real honor and a pleasure to talk with you.
Thanks for tackling these sometimes unpleasant and obscure subjects. It's really important stuff.
Thanks. Jeff Conant, author, journalist, and environmental human rights campaigner. Tagetete tagetete credatete tagetete tagen and tagadikin and nagetete kata kata katete tan and tete tagen and tan and ta dinta katete ta gainta ta dinta katete ta gainta ta dinta katete ta gainta di.